The future of Obamacare is still a mystery, with President Trump saying this week that the rollout of his replacement plan may stretch into next year. Patients, hospitals, and insurers are eagerly waiting to find out the details. So are drug companies like Pfizer. And the CEO of Pfizer, Ian Reed, joins us now for our View from the Top conversation. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you.
And we've got a lot to ask you about, but let me start with, what are you expecting when it comes to the future of Obamacare? Do you think it'll be repealed or just repaired?
You know, I don't really have a clear sight on the way through. I do believe it does need to be reformed. The insurance is not good insurance for the average person. They get, high deductibles, and they don't have good access to modern medicine. So it does need reform, but I don't have a view on where it's going to go.
Well, people may be surprised to hear that the CEO of a major pharmaceutical company doesn't know exactly what's going to happen with this very important law.
Well, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is about 12% of overall healthcare costs. And while I'm aware of the impacts of that insurance on the way that medicines are covered, it's very complicated and very connected to what providers need and insurers need and payers and patients. So, you know, everybody looks at a small part of that pie, and no one really looks at it holistically.
How much does it matter to Pfizer what happens with Obamacare?
Well, in the sense that we have not seen a huge benefit to our business from the Affordable Care Act. There was a sort of implied promise from the government that, you know, if we paid all these fees and all these taxes to help fund the Affordable Care Act, there would be expanded business through the people who are getting insured. Frankly, most of the expanded insurance base do not use innovative products because the insurance is not of a great quality.
So do you think that it was overall a benefit or not to have Obamacare in the first place?
A benefit to whom? I think it was certainly it was a benefit to some patients who had no insurance and needed to get insurance, and I'm empathetic about that. That insurance could have been given to those people in a lot more efficient way, I believe, and deserved to be given to them in a lot more efficient way.
What about the issue of drug prices? We've heard from President Trump that he would negotiate drug prices down for consumers. He has since kind of backed off on that idea a bit after meeting with a number of CEOs of pharmaceutical companies. But do you think there's going to be a change in federal policy, or could be a change in federal policy, to allow the government and Medicare in particular to negotiate drug prices?
Well, let me say, firstly, the drug prices are negotiated every day. You know, it's not as if you produce a new drug and you bring it to market and you say, here's my price. You know, you've got to get the Uniteds and the PBMs and the Humanas of the world to agree that your product has value and to list it informally and what position informally. So there are, you know, and Medicare is probably one of the most successful programs since its inception. It's come under 40% under budget. And I believe that the premiums per person have only increased on average about $6 since its inception. So that's an example of tremendous negotiation from the private sector to ensure that Medicare is a program that meets patients' needs. And I think it has an 80% approval by the recipients of Medicare.
But in the case of Medicare, they're banned by law from actually negotiating the prices directly.
Well, you know, the government doesn't negotiate directly, but they have third-party market-based incentives and people to do that. You know, in reality, you know, it's an oxymoron. You don't negotiate with a government. If a government controls the patients and controls all access, there is no negotiation, as you see in Europe.
Well, don't you have to negotiate with governments in Europe on prices?
Well,
directly?
As I was saying, you don't negotiate. In reality, it becomes an issue of they have the market and they say, we want a price that is this, and you around the edges try and negotiate to try and recover more value so you can put it into research. But in the end, we're price takers. We're not price givers in Europe. And this is bad for the system. It means that, frankly, a large part of the world is freeloading on American innovation.
Well, explain why you think it's bad for the system, though, because presumably the people are paying less in those European countries.
Well, if you pay less, you get less. For an example, we have a great product that we discovered and registered in 2011. It's called Xalkori, the first product of its type for an ALK mutation in lung cancer. People who get it tend to be young and have never smoked. There's a guy called, what comes to my mind, who I've met, Matt Hinze, 24 years of age. On the day that he was diagnosed with this, he discovered at the same time that we had just launched this treatment. He was treated at the Cleveland Clinic in August 2011. He's still alive, and now he's on a new experimental drug for us and, you know, still doing well. But, you know, if he'd been in the UK, he would never have got the diagnostic test, and the product only came to the market a year, year and a half after that, so he wouldn't have survived. And, you know, you take this example and multiply it through hundreds of thousands, if not millions of examples in Europe, and you see a huge impact on the life of, and the quality of life of people.
Although there are many who would say, you know, the drug companies always bring up the issue of research and development, and we've got to have this money so we can develop new drugs. And then we see the drug companies spending a lot of money on advertising and marketing.
Well, you know, it's all about competition. If you don't advertise, there's no competition. Competition drives prices down. So I don't see that advertising as necessarily a bad thing. I see it as a positive way to ensure that patients are aware of your therapies. You know, in Europe, you can't advertise on television. Patients are kept in ignorance of therapies, which is a way that governments use to control their health bill. So, you know, it's part of our ecosystem. It's part of being American, the ability to advertise and tell people about the great products you've got.
We're speaking with Ian Reid, who is the CEO of Pfizer. And Ian Reid, how has it been as the CEO of a big company in the U.S. to deal with this new president who's gotten much more involved in individual companies? He's tweeted about individual companies. He goes after them when they don't do things that he likes.
Well, you know, I haven't had any firsthand experience of it. I think every president has his own personality and his own way of working. You know, I'm enthusiastic about some of the potential changes in the healthcare arena that he's proposing, both tax changes and both reducing regulations and trying to get American jobs back into America if he changes the tax code. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing how he works with Congress on that.
And, of course, your company was basically specifically targeted by the previous administration of President Obama, who wanted to use you as an example of a company that was trying to merge with an overseas company and then change their tax situation so they wouldn't have to pay as much. That merger between Pfizer and Allergan ended up not going through. But you've had some experience with being called out specifically.
Yeah, but, you know, I would like to point out that you know, what we were attempting to do there was a direct cause of the tax code in the U.S., which is so penalizes U.S. companies that have overseas companies. We were just trying to get a level playing field with our European and Asian competitors. I mean, it's absurd. If we bring money back that we've made abroad, which has already paid taxes, and we want to invest it in the U.S., sometimes we have to pay up to an extra 30% of tax. Foreign companies don't do that. They can bring back all the cash they like from overseas and invest in the U.S. without any further tax. So I was just looking for a level playing field and the ability to invest more in America.
So what's a reasonable corporate tax rate in your mind?
You know, you can argue from zero because you tax it through dividends to any level that you feel is appropriate. I think, you know, a tax is eventually paid by the consumer. And so it's really up to the politicians to decide what tax rate they want to use. I just want to have an even playing field with our international competitors.
What about the issue of regulations? We've heard Donald Trump talk about how he wants to cut back on regulations, certainly stopping new regulations. How burdensome are the regulations, for example, from the FDA for a company like Pfizer? Or are they? Or are they reasonable and they should stay the way they are?
Well, let's start with saying clearly there's a role for the FDA in making sure products are safe. And, you know, all products have a balance between their safety and how efficacious they are. So, you know, I respect that from the FDA. The problem is the FDA is incentivated by the nature of the organization to be totally risk-averse. They never get applauded. They never get congratulated because they brought a product earlier to market, like Ibrance, which is the oncology division of the FDA, which is, you know, a pretty good example of how a really good regulator should work. Brings products forward, accelerates them, gets them out to treat patients. But the FDA never gets applauded for that. They only get pilloried if the product goes wrong. So they're totally risk averse.
One more thing I want to ask you about, Ian Reed, and that is at the recent World Economic Forum gathering in Davos, 83 drug and biotech firms, including Pfizer, said it was time to work together with governments to fight the spread of drug-resistant superbugs. What's standing in the way of developing new antibiotics?
Well, it's incentives. I don't think any government has ever developed a drug. They do some very, very basic research, and we hear this all the time. Oh, the government spends so much money. The NIH spends so much money. They do very basic pathway research. For instance, a drug we have out, Xeljanz, for rheumatoid arthritis. One of our scientists was at a conference of the NIHA years and years ago, saw an interesting paper, took it. We had to validate the research. And then 18 years later, we have a drug. Right? So that's the issue. The issue is how fast can we move to get these drugs into the marketplace? And how do we use the community in general to do that?
That's Ian Reed, the CEO of Pfizer. Ian Reed, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.